It's been an extra busy month for you with the storm and lots of other things going on. We're going to talk about that and start with what appeared to be a serious situation for Virginia. Ended up being much more serious, tragically, for North and South Carolina, Hurricane Florence. Virginia, fortunately, was spared the worst of the storm, but at one point, Virginia appeared to be in the crosshairs. The remnants, though, triggered heavy rains and flooding and numerous tornadoes in the Richmond area last week, which caused damage. But even without a direct hit, Governor, Florence has been costly to Virginia to the tune of about $60 million, we're hearing, mostly in storm preparations, emergency shelters and such. We are hearing from some state lawmakers is that they were shocked by those costs and they wanted some greater scrutiny of the expenditures. Talk to us about the storm preparation and your decision-making process in ordering evacuations.
Well, Mark, as you know, this was a very serious storm. At one point, Category 4, bumping up to Category 5, and we prepared for the worst and hoped for the best. We worked very closely with FEMA. We have Department of Emergency Management in Virginia. Our Secretary of Natural Safety, Public Safety, rather. We worked with the localities, and you know, I think that we did a good job. I'm very proud of our agencies, and we learned a lot from this. But you know, this was the first year we'd had the evacuation zones, mm-hmm. especially in the low-lying areas. We had four zones, and so on Monday evening, through coordination with a lot of these different agencies, we decided to have a mandatory evacuation for Zone A. And this was about 245,000 Virginians. It's something that we didn't take lightly. This was a very unpredictable storm. It was going in a lot of different directions. I remind everybody that watches the weather reports, you always see the predicted path. But there are numerous models out there, and so we had to take these into account. And at the end of the day, Virginia, for the most part, was spared. Mm-hmm. North Carolina and South Carolina have been hit very hard, to the tune of billions of dollars, and obviously they're still in the recovery phase. To date in Virginia, we have spent about $44 million. And something that we encouraged the federal government to do was to declare a state of emergency, and that allows us to get about 75% of our expenditures back. So, yes, it was expensive, but at the end of the day, we have over 8 million Virginians. My job is to keep them safe, and again, I think we did a good job. What we're going to do, Mark and Debbie, and to your listeners, is look at what we did well, what we can do better if and when this happens again. We'll have a report probably in a few weeks, and again, we learned a lot. But at the end of the day, I think Virginia fared very well through the storm.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll talk more about it when we get back.
Ask the Governor continues on WTOP. Governor Ralph Northam is with us. We are having an abbreviated version of the program this morning, but we'll be talking with the Governor for the next 45 minutes or so. You can join the conversation at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. If you have a question, you can ask it on Twitter using the hashtag AskThe, or you can pose a question on our Facebook live broadcast, which is underway if you like us on Facebook.
And Governor, as we continue to talk just quickly about Hurricane Florence. Obviously, we've still got many more weeks to go in the hurricane season, so it's still important information. For folks who aren't familiar with this zone-based evacuation system, can you explain a little bit about how that works and what folks need to know?
Absolutely. And you know, in the low-lying areas of Virginia, especially in Hampton Roads, we know that we're very vulnerable there. And so, as I said, this is the first year that we've had four zones, A through Z, A through D. Zone A is the lowest lying area. And if anybody is interested or needs to know which zone they're in, they can go to knowyourzoneva.org.
Okay.
And that's a website that we had up and running during the evacuation period. One of the things too, Debbie, and we talk about the cost of this, anytime that you order a mandatory evacuation, you must have shelters for these individuals to go to. So we had three statewide shelters, one at Christopher Newport University in Newport News, one at William & Mary in Williamsburg, and one in Richmond at VCU. And the preparation to have these shelters up and running is expensive. And that's something that we'll address as we move forward.
We do have a question as well as we talk about difficult time and the bad weather. A listener wrote into us, actually, to our website and said, does Virginia have a climate change preparedness plan that would actually minimize the effects of rain on rising sea levels, both in the Atlantic and the Chesapeake shorelines?
It's a great question, and we do. That's something that when I was in the Senate, Debbie, I worked on putting in legislation so that we could actually study climate change and the rising sea levels. And that put us in a position where we could apply, and we have received federal grants. Now we have actually a resiliency officer, and that person will be concentrating on that particular issue. How can we best prepare for climate change, for the rise in sea, future development, et cetera? So it's something that we're putting a lot of focus in. And at the end of the day, one of the things that I think we can really do is promote renewable energy and to decrease the amount of carbon footprint that we have in Virginia, look at the things that we're doing to our seas, acidifying our seas, et cetera. So one of the things that I'm so proud of our administration is that we really are focused on renewable energy. And we have 3,000 megawatts coming to Virginia, which will energize approximately 750,000 homes. We have plug-in stations, charge stations at our state parks now in Virginia. So anything that we can do to move away from fossil fuels, we're doing it as quickly as we can.
Governor, anytime you have to take a step like this, ordering mandatory evacuations and a storm doesn't hit, a lot of second guessing comes into play and Monday morning quarterbacking and whatnot. And folks often wonder if people will heed an evacuation order for the next storm after going through an experience like this. They may choose to stick around and ride it out. What is your message to them if they're thinking along those lines?
Well, my message is that I certainly hope they would heed our warnings. And as you know, I grew up on Virginia's eastern shore. We're very low-lying. I have seen firsthand what these powerful storms can do. And if you look at what happened, Mark, in North Carolina, a number of lives were lost. And a lot of these were individuals that if they had have listened and evacuated, they wouldn't have been in the situations that they were. So when people don't heed these warnings, they put themselves, their families at risk. They also put our first responders at risk. And that's something that everybody should consider and take note of. These are individuals that have families just like we do. And when they have to put their lives at risk to go in and rescue people, it's a dangerous business.
You talk about lessons learned from the storm. Is one of them any regret on your part or any hesitation about when you made the evacuation order or when you decided to end it? Any thoughts along those lines?
No, Mark, I don't have any regrets. And this was something, again, that we didn't take lightly. We worked in coordination with a lot of agencies. A couple of things I would say. Number one is if you evacuate an area like Hampton Roads, we have traffic issues there, just like they do here in Northern Virginia, and it takes a couple of days for individuals to leave their homes, prepare to where they're going to stay, what they're going to do with their children, what we do with our medical facilities, et cetera. So a lot of decision-making goes into this process. The other thing I would say is that these storms are very, very unpredictable. And, like I said, you look at the path on TV and it says, oh, well, that's exactly where it's going to go. But they change directions. And in order to evacuate, you have to do it several days in advance. So I'm pleased with the decision we made. And again, we learned a lot during this storm.
All right, Governor, we're going to take a quick question before we have to head to traffic and weather. And we're going to talk to David, who's calling in from Harrisonburg. David, what's your question for the governor this morning?
Good morning, Governor. How are you, sir?
I'm well, David. Thanks for calling in.
Outstanding. Governor, in doing some legal research, I found a company that has four notaries who are convicted felons with offenses ranging from check fraud to misuse of public funds to first-degree murder. Why is it in the interest of the Commonwealth of Virginia for people who have been convicted of crimes of moral turpitude or even murder to be authenticating documents and putting people under oath?
David, I think what maybe you're referring to is our restoration of rights process. And, I agree we need to make sure that we vet these individuals carefully, which we do. Our Secretary of Commonwealth Kelly Thomason does an excellent job doing this. I also feel very strongly, David, that once someone has paid back their time that was given them by either a judge or a jury, one of the best things that we can do to help them get back into society, get back into the workforce, be back with their family, is to restore their rights. So it's something that I feel very strongly about. But as you mentioned, we do need to vet these people. And if there are situations where individuals shouldn't receive their rights, then we will certainly take that into consideration.
Governor, I wanted to ask you about efforts to bring Amazon to the area, because obviously that opens the door to a lot of jobs in our region. Earlier this month, you had the opportunity to join D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser and Maryland Governor Larry Hogan at a business forum that was held in McLean. The region has come together in the past to secure, obviously, dedicated funding for Metro and other things. We're wondering about other issues that the three of you will be collaborating on. And, of course, among them, everyone is competing to win Amazon's second headquarters. There would be an incredible boon for the region should any of the locations be selected. Has there been any effort to collaborate with Mayor Bowser and Governor Hogan as a region to secure Amazon for the area?
Absolutely. And we did meet with them in front of the business community a couple weeks ago. I think that Virginia has put a very competitive package on the table. We would certainly like to have Amazon come to the Commonwealth. If Amazon chooses to come to the greater Washington area, whether that be in Washington, D.C. or Maryland, it would obviously be beneficial for Virginia as well. So there are several, I think, areas that we're all focused on. When I say all, the mayor and the governor of Maryland. The first is workforce training. And I have talked to so many businesses, whether it be Amazon or any other business that want to grow in Virginia or come to Virginia, and they tell us that if we can train the 21st century workforce, their businesses will thrive here in Virginia and the greater Washington area. So we are, as you know, have put a lot of emphasis on how we train the 21st century workforce. A second area is affordable housing. We know that these are going to be good, high-paying jobs, but we also have to consider our first responders, teachers, individuals that may be at lower salaries, and make sure that they have places where they can live and not be too far away from their workplace. So this is something that we have discussed as well. And then finally, something that you mentioned, traffic is always a concern and a challenge for us. And so the three of us took the step to find a dedicated source of revenue for Metro. Virginia took the lead in doing that at $154 million. Maryland and Washington have fallen in line with that. But we need to make sure that if it's a company like Amazon or any other companies, that we can handle the transportation, the infrastructure needs. So the answer to you, that's a long-winded answer, Debbie, but we are working together, because whether they come to Washington, Maryland, or Virginia, obviously we think Virginia would be the best place, but it will be a benefit for all of greater Washington.
Jeff Bezos, the head of Amazon, was in D.C. recently for an event, and we know that you couldn't make it because of the hurricane, but did you have any plants there to ask him any questions and find out about how his decision-making process is going?
No, we didn't have any plants, Debbie. And, you know, Amazon, I'll give them credit. They keep their cards very close to their chest. Mm-hmm. And again, we've put a good package on the table. We've been very open. If they have questions, any needs that they may see, concerns, et cetera, I don't know when they're going to make their decision. But, at the end of the day, we'd be very proud if their decision was to come to the Commonwealth.
I think he had said by the end of the year. Are there any next steps in this process that you guys have to fulfill?
They're not any necessary steps. But again, the workforce training is just so important to make sure that our colleges and universities, and especially our community colleges. Debbie, I make the point all the time that there are a lot of good high-paying jobs that one doesn't necessarily need a four-year college education for. So we're really ramping up our community colleges, our certification programs, apprenticeships, and even putting a lot more emphasis at the high school level in vocational and technical training. And again, I think that's the recipe to a strong economy. You know, if we can provide jobs for Virginians, no matter who they are, no matter where they are, then that's what I would like to do as governor.
Governor, we've heard from a listener who was expressing some frustration that Virginia's voter registration system was down yesterday on National Voter Registration Day. We've had reports that there have been problems intermittently for the past couple of weeks. And, of course, this is coming just a couple of weeks after a rather scathing report was issued about how bad the voter registration system can be at times in Virginia. Any sense of what's been going on either yesterday or the last couple of weeks with problems that voters have been experiencing?
Well, voting is something that we take very seriously, and that's what makes our democracy strong. And our system was down about an hour, give or take. I'm not sure if it was a little bit more, a little bit less. But we started working on that very quickly and got it up and running. And this was a technical issue. It wasn't a security issue. And I know that, you know, the JLARC report, there were some concerns about security, and we are certainly addressing those. I have made a lot of changes in our Board of Elections, and I want to assure Virginians that every vote counts, and we take this very seriously.
Some folks may remember the system crash of 2016 on the last day of voter registration, and you know the resulting problems there. We're hearing that the system in Virginia is an aging infrastructure. What is happening to shore this up to make sure that you don't have these ongoing issues?
Well, we have resources that are available, and we will be investing those. And you know, I think to your point, Mark, technology is advancing every day. It's not a perfect system. And one of the things that we have seen, quite frankly, is when our systems are inundated, when there's high volume, they're stressed. And that is certainly something that I want to address. And we saw the same thing during the hurricane. I mean, know your zone. A lot of people were calling in and the system went down temporarily. And so we've got to beef that up and make sure that when there's high volume, we'll be ready for those calls.
Any thoughts on replacing it with the newer technology?
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of new technology. And again, we have resources available. Some of them are federal grants, and we'll be investing those wisely. But every day technology changes. And so we obviously want to be up to date and make sure, as I said earlier, that every vote counts in Virginia and that people have access to these websites.
We know, obviously, we're nearing the midterm elections, and this is of concern to voters all across the country. But in Virginia, you've launched this voter registration challenge in high schools.
Yes.
Where high schools that achieve at least 65% registration of their eligible senior class get an award. That's yes. That's a pretty cool thing. I think it's been continued from when Governor McAuliffe was in office. What's the goal here? How do students get involved, and what's the award that they get?
Well, the goal is to have all Virginians that are eligible to vote participate in democracy. And as you know, a lot of our seniors in high school turn 18 during their last year. And so we just want to get out there and encourage them to register and also to kind of pay attention to what's going on in politics, because our policy making, because the more people that vote, the stronger our democracy is. And one of the things that I saw, Debbie, last year when I ran statewide in 2017, the young people, as I call them, the millennials, but people in colleges and universities and even at the high school level, they're paying attention now. They don't always do as well as they should at getting to the polls, but that's certainly something that we're working on. And the first step is to have them registered and then really encourage them the importance of going to the polls on Election Day.
Sounds like you may also need to do a little educating if they're voting absentee about getting those ballots returned. Some of these polls indicate that they have a challenge in some of them in, you know, getting a stamp
they
and getting it in the mail.
Send a letter.
Right.
Well, you know, we all have busy lives, Mark, and certainly young folk are busy as well. And again, that's part of the education process, but to encourage them once they get their absentee that it needs to go back in to be counted.
Speaking of the midterms, we want to ask you about your friend Terry McAuliffe when we come back after traffic and weather.
This is Ask the Governor on WTOP. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam is with us, and we'll be taking more of your phone calls as our conversation will continue past the 11 o'clock mark at 877-336-1035. That is 877-336-1035. You can tweet a question using the hashtag AskThe, and you can join us on Facebook. Watch the broadcast on Facebook Live, and you can submit questions there as well.
All right, Governor, as we continue to talk about the midterms, we wanted to ask you about former Governor Terry McAuliffe, a friend of yours who was just in Iowa, which is the first caucus state, of course, and he is widely viewed as a possible candidate to run for president in 2020. What are you hearing about whether or not he's going to launch a run?
Well, you know, former Governor McAuliffe and I are very good friends. He is traveling around the country helping candidates, to do their best in these 2018 midterms. I don't know what his plans are, after 2018, after the midterms. But I do want to tell you that he did a great job for Virginia. He left Virginia in very good shape, especially financially. We had a budget surplus when I came into the office, which was the first in a lot of different administrations. Our unemployment rate now in Virginia is at 3.0. It's the lowest it's been in over 10 years. So Terry worked very hard and managed the Commonwealth very well. I also would like to say that I was with his wife, Dorothy, a couple of days ago at a food summit right here in Washington. The work that she did to make sure that our children have good nutrition, that they're well fed before they start school every day, over 10 million meals that were given to our students across Virginia. So I'm a big fan of the McAuliffes, and I know he's out there. He's well connected, and he's very intent on helping these candidates, and I think doing a good job.
Think he'd make a formidable candidate against President Trump?
Well, he's going to have to make up that decision, but I Terry's again, he's well connected. He's got a lot of energy, and I think he'd be a good president if that's something he chooses to do.
Speaking of the midterms, Governor, even though there had been from the 2016 a lot of skepticism about polling, we're seeing quite a bit of indications that women will play a very strong role in the upcoming midterm elections. We know that from when you ran last year, a lot of women turned out in Virginia. There was one exit poll stat that 91% of African American women voted with Democrats in Virginia when you ran. What do you see as the potential for influence for women, not only as candidates in the midterms, but also as voters coming up?
I think it's a tremendous influence, Mark, and we have a lot of women who are candidates this year, very good candidates, and I think a number of them will be successful during the midterms. But to your point, when I ran in 2017, there was just a tremendous, tremendous amount of energy across Virginia and enthusiasm. And I think a lot of that was in response to the dysfunction that we're seeing in Washington. And people, voters are looking for leaders who will listen. They're looking for leaders that have a moral compass, that will tell the truth. And so, to your point, women play a tremendous influence. They were there in 2017. And as I travel around now in 2018 around Virginia, the enthusiasm is still there. And so I think you're going to see a large turnout, and they will have a tremendous impact on these midterm elections.
I want to talk a little bit about redistricting, because folks need to know that they're going to the right place to vote. There is a hearing set for tomorrow in a House of Delegates committee on redrawing state House district lines after a federal court panel found that 11 state House districts were unconstitutionally redrawn 7 years ago, and that disenfranchised African-American voters. Now, there is an October 30th deadline for Republicans who control the General Assembly to redraw those districts. Since we last spoke, Democrats and Republicans have come up with each of their own plans. Neither party likes what the other is doing. You've called a special session to deal with this, a special session of the General Assembly. And then several weeks ago, you said you no longer had faith that lawmakers were going to be able to get this done. Tell us where things stand right now.
Oh, thank you, Debbie. And the courts made that decision back in June, and they have given the General Assembly the opportunity to right or wrong, and that is that there are 11 House of Delegate districts in Virginia that have been packed with African Americans. And so there was correspondence between June and August, but I didn't see a whole lot happening. So I called a special session to give them the opportunity to come back to Richmond and right this wrong. The Democrats put a map on the table. It was highly criticized by the Republican Party. The Republicans have since put a map on the table. They're coming back to Richmond tomorrow. That's a legislative process that I will let play out. But at the end of the day, what we need in Virginia is a map that is fair and that's constitutional. So if such a map hits my desk for signature, I will certainly consider it. But the bottom line is here that time is of the essence here. We have 2019 elections for all 100 delegates and 40 senators. They need to start making plans. As to your point, people need to know what district they live in, who they'll be voting for. And so the sooner that we do this, the better. And so I have tried to make sure that we stay on track, on schedule for this. But to your point, a map needs to be completed by October 30th. And the sooner we can get the legislature to work on a map that is fair and constitutional, the better for Virginia.
Talking about Medicaid expansion, we understand Virginia has federal approval now for the two of the new taxes that will be paid by hospitals to fund the state share of Medicaid expansion. Those funds will also help secure federal matching funds. And we're hearing from state Medicaid officials that it looks like things are on track to launch the program and begin expansion January 1st. So bring us up to speed. What has happened in the last few months, and what will happen at the beginning of next year?
Well, as you know, we were able to, through the legislature, to expand health care in Virginia to provide up to 400,000 working Virginians access to coverage, something that we're very proud of. And I will tell you that our team has been working very hard to make sure that this can be implemented by January 1. There are actually two tracks, Mark. One is the state plan amendment, which is fairly straightforward. That's part of Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. The second track is what we call the 1115 waiver, which we have applied for through CMS, and that's where the work requirement comes in. That actually may take longer, but that's certainly going to be up to the decision-making of CMS. But I would just encourage individuals across Virginia, they can go to covervA.org, and that will tell them if they're eligible and how they can sign up for coverage. But we are on track, and I'm confident that we can do this the right way. We can show the country that Virginia is a leader and have this available by January 1.
Now, through that website, can people enroll in the coverage now for next year? Has that already started?
It will tell them what they need to do to enroll.
Okay.
Yes, and certainly.
First steps.
Yes, and that's important for people to do because obviously they don't want to wait to the last minute, and it's a preparation is a good thing. And,
mm-hmm.
and so we encourage people to get on that website. Again, it's covervA.org, and that will give them information as to how to enroll.
Will the funds that are being discussed, the taxes and matching funds that total hundreds of millions of dollars, will that cover all of the costs associated with expansion?
Well, I wouldn't say it would cover all the costs. The way it's set up, Debbie, is that 90% of the costs will be covered by the federal government and 10% by Virginia, but a significant amount of it will be covered. And, you know, I think we need to look at how we should best spend those resources, but certainly areas like primary care, OBGYN care for women, and also the opioid crisis. As you know, we have the ARTS program, which is the Addiction and Recovery Treatment Services for those that are challenged with opioid addiction. And so a lot of that funding will go to that area as well.
Governor, you mentioned opioids. I know we read that it's law in Virginia now for some designated areas to launch needle exchange
yes.
programs to combat the spread of infectious diseases due to people who are increasingly using opioids. IV drug users under the program would be able to swap used needles for clean ones, which health experts say would lower the risk of infections. But to date, there are no programs operating in the state. It requires law enforcement to be involved. Tell us, what are the difficulties in getting this up and running?
Well, to your point, and just as speaking as a doctor, when people used unclean needles, we certainly have a risk of diseases like HIV and hepatitis. And so, you know, we want to do everything that we can to keep people safe. I think a bigger picture, Mark, is how can we keep individuals from going down that path of addiction? And one of the things that I have been doing as a doctor is I don't see patients anymore, but I've been going around Virginia giving grand rounds lectures to our medical schools, talking to our students, our residents, and other providers that are out there in the field on more innovative ways of treating both acute and chronic pain. Because what I have learned by listening to folks out there is that a great majority of these individuals that are addicted start with a prescription from someone like me, a provider. And so we need to be very cognizant of that and do everything that we can to prevent addiction. There also, as I just said, there are increased resources that we now have available for, like, our community service boards, for people to get same-day treatment, for first responders to carry Narcan, which will reverse the deadly side effects. So we're really coming at this from a lot of different angles. But the bottom line is we lost 1,227 Virginians last year, and we need to do better.
Ask the Governor on WTOP with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. We continue our discussion at 877-336-1035 if you want to join in. 877-336-1035 if you have a question for the Governor. You can tweet a question using the hashtag AskThe. And you can also submit questions if you're watching along on Facebook Live. Like us on Facebook. So, Governor, before the break, we were talking about drug problems and opioid abuse in the state, and the needle exchange was the how we got into that discussion. The program, or at least the infrastructure, is there if everybody could join forces and launch one of these programs in Virginia. And what we have been hearing is that part of the challenge is to get the support of law enforcement in certain areas where these programs may be considered. We had heard that Wise County in Southwest Virginia, where about 120 people died from opioid overdoses within the last 10 years, is one area that was being considered. Do you know if efforts are underway to try to bring everybody together and focused on this?
They are, Mark, and quite frankly, the stigma is still out there that some of these people are not good people, and that when you're supplying clean needles, you're really condoning or encouraging, you know, drug use. But we need to get past that stigma and, again, realize that these are individuals that have taken a path in their lives, a lot of times at no fault of their own. And we really need to get them the help in recovery, to wean them away from opioids. We do that through our ARTS program. We do it through access to community service boards. But at the same time, we want to make sure that we keep them as safe and healthy as we can. And one of the ways to do that is we don't want to combat the problem by having them affected by either HIV or hepatitis. So that's why the emphasis there to provide clean needles.
Here in D.C., we have been running stories this week about the growing problem of synthetic marijuana, which is known as K2 or spice. In the last 3 months, there have been like 1,600 patients taken to the hospital for overdoses related to K2. Is this also a challenge for Virginia, for health officials and law enforcement? And if so, how are you guys dealing with it?
It is a tremendous challenge, Debbie. And I mentioned that we had 1,227 Virginians die from opioid overdose, but over 1,500 that died from addiction as in general. And certainly spice is one of those areas. And I would just really encourage people across Virginia to, you know, anytime you're taking a substance like this where you don't know who's made it, you don't know what you're getting, and these things happen, and they are so tragic. So, you know, I've always encouraged as a pediatrician to just not take that first step and put something like that in your body. But obviously it happens. It's a tremendous challenge. And not only are we working on the opioid addiction, but the addiction crisis overall. And again, we have resources, and we're, you know, working on how best to spend those resources. But it is a serious, serious challenge. And it doesn't discriminate, as I tell people.
At 11:15, let's take another call from Kim, who is calling in from West Virginia to speak with you, Governor. Kim, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Good morning, Governor. I'm actually from Loudoun County, Bluemont in Loudoun County, Northern Virginia.
Oh, I'm sorry, Kim.
I have a question for you. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Kim.
I have a question, Governor. We had a factory being built very close to us, about 9 miles from Loudoun County in West Virginia. And I'm really concerned about the impact on Loudoun County, on our health, but most importantly, the economic impact. We have a thriving, and brewery business here. My children go to school here. We love Loudoun County. But something is happening in West Virginia with this factory that's not even American. It's a Danish company. They have carcinogenic chemicals going to come out of their chimney stacks and black smoke that will be coming through our wineries when they're holding weddings. Can you do something to help us on this?
Kim, thank you so much for the question. And I will tell you that air quality is very important. Just as a pediatrician, the incidence of asthma is increased when children are exposed to poor air quality. And to your point, this is a factory in West Virginia. Air doesn't abide by geographical boundaries, as we say. So a lot of this air could be coming into Virginia. So I have been working with our DEQ. They are very aware of this issue. I also am working with our Secretary of Natural Resources, Matt Strickler. He has been in correspondence with his equals in West Virginia. So it's something that we are investigating. And again, air quality and water quality are very important to us. And we want to make sure that we have the best quality that we can. And if there's a factory that's causing the air pollution that's coming into Virginia, then we're going to deal with it.
Governor, I know we're into our final minutes here with you this morning. I did want to ask you about this new initiative to combat drunk driving. Virginia is the first state to join this. Research underway to develop an in-car sensor to determine if the driver is too intoxicated to drive. This would be different from traditional ignition interlock devices that most of us may have heard about or familiar with, because the new technology would not require the driver to breathe into a tube to detect their blood alcohol level. You had a chance to see this this system. How would it work? Tell us your impressions of it, and how significant could it be in saving lives?
Yeah, no, I did do a demonstration. I sat it behind the wheel, and it measures the amount of alcohol in the air that's coming out of someone's exhalation, and it is very accurate. We're doing a pilot program right now, Mark, to see how it works. They're collecting data on it. But as I said earlier, the technology in this country is improving every day. And what a great way to make our roads safer by having these available in vehicles, and before the car will start, it has to be known that there's no alcohol in the driver's system. So it's a first step, new technology. Mm-hmm. It looked like it's going to work very well. And again, at the end of the day, we want to keep Virginia drivers safe.
What's Virginia's role in this? Is it after it's perfected? Will there be a benefit to Virginia drivers to get this first or something? Or?
Well, they're working with our VDOT, Department of Transportation folks, and folks that work at DMV. To monitor it, to collect data, and that will be done over probably the next few months to a year, and then this will be marketed, and it will be available in vehicles, not only for personal vehicles, but for or private vehicles, but for commercial vehicles, limousines, taxis, that type of thing, to make sure that individuals are sober that are driving.
How close is this to being perfected?
I think it's very close. Again, I think months to a year, and then we'll have the data available, and then it will be available to people that want to have it, and it can be ordered. It's obviously going to be an expense, an option, if you will, when mm-hmm. you purchase a car, but it's something that will be available.
All right. That'll have to do it for our abbreviated version of Ask the Governor this month. We look forward to talking to you again next month.
Thank you all so much for having me
today.
Thanks
for coming in, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam.
Thank you, Governor.